This is Scott Vanderplume, and you're listening to the Artist Edition Index podcast interview special with Scott Dunbier, recorded April 2020.
I went down to the St. James Infirmary, found my baby there, stretched out on a long white table, so sweet, so cold, so fast.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, Scott, how you doing?
Good, how about you?
Not too bad. Not too bad.
I was talking to somebody today and said, looks like New York's probably going to be canceled. And I'd say every convention this year.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, wow.
I'm actually working on a presentation. There's going to be a Comic-Con is doing a series of virtual panels.
Oh, nice.
They're not going to be live. They're going to be pre-taped. And I'm doing one next week with Dirk Woods moderating. And there'll be a couple of special guests dropping in. It won't be purely artist editions. That's what it was intended to be originally. But I'll be talking about a few other things like Sam Keith's Batman Max book that's been delayed forever and that's finally done. And the new series by John Layman and Nick Bradshaw, Bermuda, as well as updates on Ragnarok and artist editions. And nice. I'm hoping by then to have an advanced copy of the Cockrum book.
Oh, nice. Is the 4-year plan, is that doable? Are you sticking to it?
It would have been doable this year, but I'm not sure it is right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I have 4 books on the schedule for this year, and one of them is printed. One of them is at the printer, but won't go until we have revised numbers on it, and that's the Golden Micronauts book,
right?
Because the numbers came in on April 1st, so they're worthless at this point. And then the Jim Lee book and the EC Covers book.
Does that mean we won't be seeing the Don Rosa book this year?
So with the Don Rosa book, the numbers on the second book were too low for us to do, although I am exploring other options on it. I definitely want to do volumes 2 and 3, but it's going to be a little ways off. I have all the files, all the scans from Don. Sure. You know, part of the problem is that the cost of printing has gone up, and that is one of the large books. I don't remember what the dimensions were off the top of my head. It wasn't quite 15 by 22, but I think it was like maybe 14 by 20, something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, once you get above the 12 by 17, I mean, the 12 by 17 books are very expensive to produce also. But when you get larger, it's considerably more.
And is that, I mean, this year saw the first price increase I've seen in these volumes from IDW with your 12 by 17 going to 150. What is the 15 by 22 going to go to?
Well, the EC book is at 150. And, you know, we're probably going to have to, for all future books, go up to 175.
Okay.
And, you know, I think we've kept these books as fairly priced as we've been able to for the last 10 or so years, because between the cost of printing and the fees the copyright holders, whether it's Marvel or DC or EC or anyone, get, plus the royalties that are paid on the books, you know, they're not huge money makers right now. I mean, in the early days, they made more money because we had higher sales. Higher sales equals lower print cost. And, you know, the best-selling book we did was the Mazzucchelli Daredevil book. And that one, you know, that was a pretty profitable book. But if a book sells 1,000 copies, it's not that profitable. I mean, it is profitable, but it's not, again, because, you know, taking into account the cost of printing, which if you have print runs that are under 1,000, the cost is much greater. And we, you know, if we get orders of 700, we'll print, you know, 1200. So there's also the risk there of having lots of inventory that, that then isn't sold. So this was sort of a move to try to generate more revenue for the company, and so we could continue doing these books. I mean, I personally, I think that they're not a bad value even at $150. Mm. But then again, I don't pay for them.
you had kept the price, or IDW had kept the price a little bit lower than everybody else, and now you're sort of, you know, the average. So it's not, I still don't think it's unreasonable for what you're getting.
I do appreciate that, really. Because there are other costs involved too. I mean, you know, if I go on a scanning trip, it's not just the cost of airfare, it's the cost of hotel, it's the cost of meals, it's the cost of renting a car so I can take the scanner around. Hmm. I was supposed to be in New York from March 26th through 29th. And, you know, my trip, of course, got canceled. But I was going to be in New York and Washington and New Jersey to scan at three different places, three different collections, to try to make it as cost effective a trip as possible. But even that, you know, we're talking about a trip that's, you know, with everything, it's $3,500.
Yeah.
And, you know, that gets added to the cost of the books.
Like a book like the Don Rosso, so it's Diamond keeps it on, or is IDW keeping it on? If there's a, you know, there's a couple year delay, is that Diamond moving the date? Is it IDW, or is it just hopeful that it will happen, or?
That's Diamond.
Okay. How is the Artisan Edition format getting enough orders or profitable that you'd see that continuing, or with new material, I guess is what I meant.
With new material is, you know, it's hard to say, you know, with new material. I mean, going forward with existing material right now is a better move for us, because it's, you know, frankly, less work. Right. And it enables people to get some books that have sold out and they don't want to pay artist edition prices. I mean, for instance, the David Mazzucchelli Daredevil Born Again book, that came out, you could probably tell me better than I know, in what, November? We're in a second printing now.
Yeah.
And, you know, and even a book like that is a little bit expensive to print, because I insisted on putting the vellum overlays.
Oh, overlay, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Which David was very happy about. My bosses weren't that happy, but you know, they indulged me.
Well, this way it's exactly like the artist edition, just smaller. It's a perfect representation of the material, just at a reduced size.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way, because that's how I feel about it too.
They're great. I mean, I would never trade my artisan edition, the artist edition for an artisan edition, but for the price point, especially this book, I mean, this is the, as you said, best selling book, consistently the highest books, the book on eBay getting the most money or getting the highest. So it's consistently over $200 if you want to buy one on eBay. So if you can get one for $50, it's pretty great. No, I just, you've done a couple of the new, I'm just wondering if it can't work as an artist edition, if it can't work at full size, have you given it any thought at all to, well, then maybe I'll get enough orders at the artisan size, or you just don't want to do that?
You know, I guess maybe I could. That might be a good solution for the G.I. Joe book, which, you know, that one did have the lowest orders we've gotten on a book, which wow. Sort of surprised me, because, I mean, you know, I'm not a giant G.I. Joe fan, so it's not a book for me personally, but the material that was in it, you know, very early stuff, complete stories, I would have expected more people to order that. But, you know, maybe we could talk about doing that as an artist, and I mean, theoretically.
Right. All right. So if...
Are you flummoxed by my answers?
No, your answers are great. I just, you know, this is, it's interesting, because you get so involved with the material, and the questions come. And like I said, I realized my email was quite long with all the questions, so I didn't want to go through them. But it's just when you think of them, there's so much material out there, and you know, as a fan, for us, it's just, you know, snap your finger and you've got a book.
Sure.
And you know, from your perspective, it's months and maybe years of work and effort, but we don't see that. And I think that was the issue when you reduced the number of books per year. Everyone thought, oh, what happened? You know, is the line dying, or why are we going from 12 to 4? Are we ever going to get any again? But
well, I'll tell you, the I had never intended to do 10 or 12 books a year. I always wanted to do 4 to 6, mm-hmm. but I was a victim of success. You know, the books did really well, and so I was asked to do more by my employers.
you and I have met in person once at TCAF.
Oh, we did? Oh, okay, yeah. Cool.
I said to you, "Wow, you've increased the printing schedule one a month," and your immediate response was, "Not my idea." I guess you were there with Darwin. For that, the prose book.
Yeah, that was a nice. That was a nice trip. I really enjoyed TCAF a lot.
Yeah, I think that was your I think that was your last time there.
First and only.
First and only. All right. It was nice to have you there. It was surprising to see not a lot of mainstream publishers show up. Come back.
I have a lot of eclectic tastes.
It's a good show for all kinds of things. If you've it's. I get to meet British publishers like Self-Made Hero and some European publishers. It's a nice mix of what you don't see otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's also, I really enjoyed the way the show was put together. You know, first, I don't know, is it still in that library?
Yes.
That place is great. You know, I mean, the two levels and the open level to the second floor, yep, is wonderful. And the way they do panels. I mean, I did a panel with Darwin in a bar. That was great.
Yep. Yeah. It's almost outgrown the building now. It's circling three levels now, and they've moved the kids programming to a church that's close by, and they've moved some mainstream artists to a different building. And so it's pretty large at this point.
Nice. Yeah. I definitely want to come back as long as I can make it work with a trip to Canada.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to go back. And as long as I don't have to fly Air Canada, because Air Canada is the worst airline I've ever been on.
That's so true. It really is terrible. Well, IDW, I don't think it's had a presence ever at Fan Expo Canada, which is the third largest show in North America. So
Is that in Toronto or is that on the West Coast?
Toronto, Labor Day weekend.
Labor Day weekend.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe we can talk about going. You know, I've always been a big fan of poutine. So,
got to go to Quebec, though.
Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah, poutine. Or in French, they say poutin.
Ah, right.
But yeah, it's pretty close. Very good. So, newspaper strips. I wanted to ask you. So, I remember I asked you on our last phone call, and you know, you said you did Schultz's Peanuts. It was low sales, didn't seem worthwhile. And then I was shocked that Bloom County came out. And then I saw you recently say, I think it was on Twitter or maybe it was the forum, that newspaper strip sales were too low and you weren't going to do anymore. What was that, a test balloon then to try Bloom County or?
Yeah, you know, I really thought that Bloom County might hit a little bit more of an itch than some of the strips. I think part of it is the fact that when you do a newspaper strip, the original strip was in black and white. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people still feel that it's too close to the original format it was in, even though it's tiny and minuscule by comparison. And, you know, the Peanuts book didn't really help because when we did that book, our hands were kind of tied by the Schultz people because they had to provide the scans. We couldn't scan them. I mean, I wanted to go up to the museum and scan the work myself, but they wouldn't allow that. And I wasn't really happy with the scanning. I mean, to me, if you compare the scanning on Peanuts to Bloom County, it's a world of difference. You know, the Bloom County book, you know, looks like an artist edition.
Great presentation. I was blown away by his sketches or rough work in the back.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. He sent me a box of sketchbooks. Wow. I mean, most of them were really, really rough. I mean, I went through probably like 30 different sketchbooks to come across that material. And I also cheated because a lot of it's enlarged.
Oh, okay.
But I think I think for a sketchbook, that's okay.
Yeah, looks great. Maybe 10 years ago, I switched my reading from mainstream comics to, well, I dropped mainstream comics about 20 years ago, but I really started focusing on newspaper strips about 10 years ago. And I think like a lot of the people on the Tapa Talk forums there, we're all anxious to see some more Golden Age strips as an artist edition.
Well, I mean, you know, the two that are probably the easiest for me to do, actually the three, would be the Williamson Corrigan.
Yeah.
His family has, I don't know, maybe thousands.
Right.
And Rip Kirby, there are enough Rip Kirby dailies out there by Raymond. And quite honestly, that's my favorite material by Raymond, especially the later stuff. And then Pogo, you know, there's so much Pogo material out there too. They, all three of those could be books.
But would there be enough sales?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I'd like to explore maybe Kickstartering a couple.
Right.
There's another book that I want to do that, I'm a big fan of, and I'm not sure how people would react to it, but I would love to do, and this would be a a 15 by 22 inch book.
Right.
I'd like to do Archie, and I'd like to do it as a flip book. Dan DiCarlo on one side and Harry Lucy on the other. You know, I'm a huge fan of both those artists, and especially their work from the 50s. And early 60s. I have enough material by Dan DiCarlo in my own collection.
Wow.
But Harry Lucy, I know enough people who have really great Harry Lucy stuff to do it. Because, again, if it's a flip book, you know, I only need to really get 65 or 70 pages of stories by each artist.
Right.
And, you know, I'd love to do this book. We couldn't do it just as a regular artist edition. It would have to be something as a Kickstarter. You know, I'll probably approach my pal Mike Pellerito at Archie and see if that would be possible. But again, you know, don't look for that anytime soon.
Is IDW and you, or you sound open to Kickstarters, but is that a possibility? I mean, Dirkwood, I think, did the couple issues of Full Bleed, but I don't think I've seen anything else from IDW and Kickstarter.
Actually, we've done a whole bunch.
Oh.
And but we've done them with board games.
Oh, right.
So for instance, you know, there's the Turtles game. There's a Batman game that we did, Batman Turtles. I'm not sure what it was. But you know, those have really high ticket achievements on their Kickstarters. You know, we just did one, Gary Bennington, who's in charge of that department. He just did one that, you know, I think it was like $1.5 million that it got. But again, you know, like you said, these things just show up and you don't understand the stuff that goes into it. Those games have sometimes dozens of figures that are included. And so the cost really spiral.
Well.
So I would be up for doing some Kickstarters. I got to talk to Chris Ryle more about it. We've talked about it in theory a couple of times, but I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to maybe give it a shot.
Would that be in addition to the four you're already planning, or would you work that in as part of the four?
You know, I if it aligns, I'm fine with doing five books a year or even six books a year. And on the other hand, you know, if it happens that we only do three, then we only do three.
Right.
I mean, it's not these books are a little bit different than standard books because of the searching that's involved and tracking artwork down. I mean, I have several books that are planned for the next couple of years that I have a good chunk of the work already in hand, but I still need to track down more. So until you are actually able, until you have a good idea that you can do it, it's tough to say exactly when a book is going to be coming out.
Right. Was the Roy Krenkel book a success?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a huge financial success, but it was a success. That was, for me, all these books are sort of a labor of love, but that particular one, I met Roy Krenkel in 1981, and I knew him for about a year and a half. He died in 1983. Okay. I was 18 when I met him. He died when I was 20. He was a friend of mine. He was a great guy, and I always loved his art. You know, I mean, from the time I first discovered his work in fanzines back in the mid 70s, when I was, you know, searching for EC fanzines and I was searching for Frazetta fanzines, and, you know, he was always mentioned and he always had art in them. So when I met him, it was a huge thrill, and he was a great guy.
Does that open the door to maybe more art books, or?
Sure.
Was it successful enough to continue on?
You know, it depends on the artist. I mean, right. It's, you know, I've done a lot of art books, and I've done a lot of sort of off the wall books too. I'm cleaning my garage right now, and I came across a copy of Grimwood's Daughter. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Grimwood's Daughter is one of the first things that Kevin Nolan ever did. It was in the back of Dalgoda, published by Fantagraphics. And we did a collection of that back in, I don't know, maybe 2009, 2010. And, you know, I did that one. I did, I did the Rio book. Yep. Which I really enjoyed. That was a lot of work. Then the Reed Fleming book was one that I really wanted to do. And
Clue to Sketchbooks.
Clue to Sketchbooks, right?
When you did those, had you planned to do the five soft covers and then the hardcover, or was that always in your mind?
Nope. It was just, you know, when we got to, you know, book two, Michael and I were talking about it, and it just seemed like it would work.
Interesting. That's I love art books too. It's funny, move more away from the mainstream comics and discover all kinds of different things with the variant covers. I wanted to get into a little bit of history of the artist editions. So they seem to have started as a convention exclusive and sort of continued on that way. But then there's been you've had some multiple covers of regular editions, and then you've had some signed limited for conventions. Are you following a pattern, or is it just however the stars align that you can get a creator? Or
yeah, I mean, it used to be we would do a variant cover for, you know, nearly every artist edition, right. And some of them were cool, some of them were not as cool, but, you know, they're kind of, I feel like there has to be a sort of a reason now to do them. And so, you know, for instance, with the Dave Cockrum book, there's a variant cover, and it'll be the same kind of thing as the John Byrne book we did last October. It's going to have a variant cover that will be a virgin wraparound cover.
Right.
And it's also, it has signature plates bound into the book by Chris Claremont.
Awesome.
Michael Golden signed a number of signature plates that will be bound into his book also.
Oh, wow.
That's all we have planned right now in that.
Do you limit the number just to make, you know, to make it more special? Or because lately it seems those sell out practically the same day.
You know, this goes back to talking about how the revenue isn't as great as it used to be. And so to make sure that the books are profitable, I try to do something like that. Right. Because we sell those direct to consumer.
Yep.
And, you know, and if we sell, you know, 125 copies of a book at $200, that is, you know, the equivalent of a much higher... Well, it just helps in the overall cost of the book and making it profitable. And of course, we still pay royalties on those as well.
Yeah, right.
And if somebody signs them, we pay them for the signatures.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has there been any thought, or when you're announcing a book, to also announce that you'll have a signed? I know there's some grumbling on the forums there that I pre-ordered my book through my local comic shop, and you know, I've committed now, and now this, you've announced the signed one.
You know, it's not always easy. It's not always easy to get things like that done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's having somebody sign them. It depends on their schedule. It depends on a number of things. So, you know, until, you know, fairly late in the game, I wasn't sure that we would have the signature plate signed by Chris Claremont.
Right.
You know, that came about. I mean, it was in talks for months, but it was finally done, you know, after the book was solicited. And then I also never want to announce anything like that until I have signed plates in hand.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That would be that would be hard to.
And you know, for instance, on the Michael Golden one, which, you know, I guess I'm announcing here, maybe I mentioned it on the boards. But on the Michael Golden one, you know, I literally got the signed plates less than a month ago.
You've posted the wraparound cover for the Cockerman. You've mentioned Claremont signing, but you hadn't mentioned Golden signing. So interesting for sure. Being in Canada, the shipping is just horrific, right? From the United States. So I'm always trying to get everything local. So I think I've said it before on the site a bunch of times, but I'm not a fan of variant covers. It's just I don't see the point. But right. that's just personal. I mean, that's what, when you get into something like a signed, or now you've got something right unique and much different than a standard book, but I don't know, a different cover. But a couple of the books you actually released with two covers, like the Marvels, the modern covers, and the Bernie Wrightson, you released two covers. What was the best of ABC? What made you want to release two covers as part of the release?
You know, it's with the ABC book, there were so many great artists in that book, and there were three long stories and the rest were shorter stories. So I really wanted to have Tom Strong and Promethea have their own covers. And I think didn't I put on the back cover top 10?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, those three were, you know, the anchors of that line. So it's hard to choose, you know, I mean, and with the Marvel covers, there were actually like five covers, by the way.
Yes, it was a good one, but I was just saying just your mainstream releases, but.
Right. Again, you know, how do I pick just one? You know, how do I pick out of all those different great artists and really nice covers, how do I pick just one? So that's why we made them available like that. And we made them available through Diamond. So fans and retailers could order whichever cover they wanted.
How did those other covers happen? Where it was, right? I think there was one that was it a Stanley Enterprises or?
It's like, you know, as with comics, retailer exclusive. So Retailers buy a certain number. I think the minimum is 100.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
That's a big artist edition commitment.
Right. But, you know, some of them, I mean, like I think Torpedo Comics, I think, got one. With a Jim Lee cover that then they did an event with Jim.
Yeah, I've seen a Jim Lee cover. I think I saw a Rob Liefeld cover, maybe not.
Yeah, I guess. Was there?
I don't remember the five.
Yeah, you know, there was a Rob cover. That's right. It was, I don't remember what it was.
I just wanted to step back for a minute. I think we all know the story of the Rocketeer, you seeing Chip Kidd's art in some glass and then getting and deciding to do the first. But what, after that first Rocketeer artist edition, what was the, how did it sell? How did it do? What was your thought then to move on to the next book and the next book? How did you get then to Wallywood and Simonson?
You know, it's purely what I love, you know, especially the first couple of years. You know, Wally Wood might be my favorite comic book artist. It's funny. I say I used to be I'm a big Beatles fan, and I used to just love John Lennon, and not love Paul McCartney quite as much. But the older I get, the more I love Paul McCartney.
Right.
And that's kind of like how I was with Wally Wood. You know, I mean, my favorite artist as a kid. I mean, I you know, probably have 30 favorite artists, but my favorite artist as a kid was Neil Adams, and you know, lots of others, Jack Kirby, Walter, Joe Kubert on Tarzan. All that stuff really hit me. And what I discovered a little bit later, I was probably like 15 when I discovered, it was younger than that, because I started reading East Coast comics back in like 72, 73, when they started coming out, when I was like 9 years old. But you know, the more I look at Wally Wood, the more it just makes me happy. You know, I just love his work so much. Anyway, that wasn't your question. So, you know, basically I just like different artists, and those are the guys that I, you know, would like to work with the most. So the second book was Walter. Third book was Wally Wood.
John Romita. That was...
Oh, was it? Oh.
I'm looking at the list. I never remember the proper order, so I pulled up the list after I rattled off.
You know, it's funny. I do check your site when I have a question about something with artist editions.
Well, it's good to have it all in black and white, right? Let me clarify my question, because I don't think I was very clear. After having the first one, was there, in your mind, were you thinking, hey, this could be a line? Or was IDW thinking this could be a line of books?
You know, I honestly don't really remember. I know I had in my own head the idea of doing three or four. Sure. And then the first one was met with such positive response that, you know, we decided to keep on going. Sure. I mean, we actually went through a couple of printings on that first one. Mm-hmm. And then the second one was Walter. And, you know, again, it was a no-brainer, because he was one of those guys when I was a kid. He was just one of my favorite guys. And I'm going to sound a little bit pompous or conceited right now, but I think I have okay taste.
Right.
And so, you know, the guys that I've been doing books on are guys who I love. Not always, you know, there've definitely been some artists that would not have been my first choice, but you know, other people like them. You know, as an example, I have respect for Ross Andrew as an artist, but he was never one of the guys, he wasn't my Spider-Man artist.
Yeah.
But Chris Wozniak just kept on badgering, and I finally caved. No. Chris Wozniak's a huge Ross Andrew fan, and he would always ask me to do it. And then finally I, you know, came across enough material to do a book. And a lot of people really, really love that book. Again, it's not for me, but, you know, you can't love everything, right?
Yeah. You had all the art from Dave Stevens for The Rocketeer to do the deluxe edition and the hardcover. So, and then Simonson's famous for keeping all his art. So I guess the Romita book was the first book you had to hunt art for, or you just, was it mostly from Romita man?
Mike Berkey.
Yeah. Thank you.
No, Mike was instrumental in that book and other books. You know, there've been a lot of people who've been very helpful. You know, Mike Berkey, Jim Halpern, Albert Moy, the guys at Comic Link, Comic Connect, and others who right. don't like to be mentioned.
Right.
So yeah, that one wasn't too tough either. And actually, when I scanned Mike's work, that was enough for those three books.
Wow.
And
2012, Titan releases Alien, the Illustrated Story, the original art edition. So that's the first. That's the first artist edition style book, not from IDW. How did you feel about that?
Well, a couple of things. I was jealous because I love the material.
Right.
I've always felt this is a format, and so I have no problem with other companies doing it. A couple of people, a couple of places have been a little bit close to things that I do in design, and even in the way they describe the books.
Yes, agreed.
And so that kind of makes me shake my head a little bit, but you know, it's not a big deal. But I have no problem with anyone else doing the content. I mean, Fantagraphics has done some great books. And I'm very jealous about the Dan Clowes and Jaime Hernandez books. I had talked to both of them about doing it, but then Fantagraphics started to join the club and produce some really nice books. And, you know, that makes complete sense to me. You know, they have long-term relationships with those artists, and they did beautiful books that were in no way similar to mine, except for how they're produced.
Yes, I agree there. Artist edition is, it's a format. You are the, you know, by sheer volume and I guess tenaciousness, or you are the ambassador for the line and for the format at this point.
Well, I gotta say, I am both flattered and completely bemused that I have awards named after me.
Hey, there you go. That's, yeah, one day I'll get a plaque going. One day.
You can use the drawing by Campbell of me.
Yes, I know. I need a better copy of that. That's, I've got a friend of mine's a graphic artist. I've been trying to work with him to come up with something, at least a badge or something. But
well, I have the original art, so I can send you a scan of that.
Oh, that'd be awesome. When you posted those numbers for, like you said, that you need 6,800 for the Alex Toth portfolio. Is that a little bit higher now because of the cost of printing, or was that always the sort of what you were looking for those portfolios?
Well, it's a couple of things. First, the cost of printing the portfolios is less than a book, but it's still expensive. Mm. You know, if I were to do just portfolios and envelopes, there'd be no problem, you know, but because I want to do hardcover portfolios, which is something I stole from a couple of French portfolios I've seen. I have a beautiful Charles Burns hardcover portfolio from mm-hmm. France, and I have a gorgeous Robert Crumb portfolio of drawings of his village in France. And when I saw those, I just, you know, I never liked envelopes anyway because they tear. It's like dust jackets. I don't like dust jackets.
Yes.
Because they tear. And what, you know, what good is that? So the cost of the portfolios is high and the MSR is not high. You know, we were charging $40 a portfolio.
Yeah.
And it's just not cost effective. If we were to get orders of 600 or 800, then we could consider it, but with 300 or 400, it's not really worth it. I mean, because also, you know, my time gets billed against these things too, mm-hmm. yep. and the time of production, and you know, their design costs. So, you know, there's a lot of variables involved.
Is that why the Ragnarok portfolio was only a convention and then exclusive, and then only available through IDW?
I'm embarrassed to say I can't remember.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was the only portfolio that I was late to the portfolios. I was picking them up at conventions for $10 a piece on clearance tables. And then I started to get the rest. And I decided as content's dropping, I'm looking for things to review for the site. So last year, that was my big portfolio push. For the IDW anniversary sale, I picked up the last few portfolios I needed. And I love the format. I'd love to see more of it as in a book of this material or a book, but I understand the impetus of portfolio was that was it. You the art was available. It was a complete story of so many pages, and you didn't have enough material or couldn't have enough material for a complete book. Is that still the case?
Yeah. Although with Ragnarok, of course we could.
Yeah. You've got all that.
But yeah, I mean, and then also in some cases, like when we did the EC covers, yes. You know, that was just a way to do something fun, you know, not the most expensive thing in the world, but it was something I thought that was cool with a lot of nice covers. What do we have? 8 covers in there?
Yep.
And I mean, it's no secret that EC pound for pound to me is the greatest comics line of all time. So I have a great love for that material. I discovered it when I was like 9 years old. And I read a lot about it in fanzines and in Steranko's books and, you know, other things, other places. But yeah, anyway, I love EC Comics. Big surprise.
I'm sure I'm like all the other fans. We're anxiously hoping, you know, that we'll see a few more EC artist editions.
Okay, this is not going to be any time in the next year or two,
right.
But I am working on a third best of EC volume that I've been collecting stories when I come across them that weren't in the previous books. There are still a lot of stories that I really, really want to get.
I think as fans, I think we're all crazy for more, for sure. With the license change for the Spirit, is that it? We're not going to see any more than the two, or
I'm not sure if artist editions were part of them going to Clover or not. Okay. Might be, but you know, those two books were really, to me, really good. And I was happy with the design. I was happy with the stories were in there. You know, the Spirit's a little bit tougher because some of the Well, it's a little bit tougher. So I think we're probably just going to have those two.
Yeah, I just, I love the design. I love the Eisner quotes on the chapter breaks. I just, it was, they were just really great packages.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I went through, I mean, luckily Eisner talked about every single story in the back of the comics. And, you know, there were a couple of quotes that were hard to pick, you know, that were, you know, just sort of random quotes, but most of them, you know, there was some really good stuff in there and a lot of great, a wealth of great quotes to choose from.
I was hopeful, but I get like that quote in the EC, right? Don't be sad it's gone. Be thankful that it happened at all. with the Tarzan, those issues that you didn't have in the three volumes, is that because they weren't available, or what was the, how did you end up not getting those? Or did you have to just pick out of Kubert's run enough to make three volumes? Did you always have three volumes in mind? It was just, or it was just building on the impetus of the previous one's sales?
You know, the first volume had the first seven stories, and then, you know, I'll do Joe Kubert books any day of the week. So, I mean, the Tarzan books, especially the first one and the Enemy Ace book, you know, that's stuff that I deeply loved. I mean, I think it's all consecutive in volumes one and two. And then I think volume three did have a story or two that was missing that, Edgar Rice Burroughs Peoples didn't have the art. Okay. Because the deal that, Edgar Rice Burroughs had, and you know, I just want to say Joe Kubert was completely aware of this, and so was Russ Manning and Jesse Marsh. All the artwork was retained by Edgar Rice Burroughs, which, you know, made my job a lot easier because it's all in one place.
Right. And I guess could open the door for a, if you wanted to do a Manning newspaper strip, but
yeah,
I'm not a huge Manning fan.
His work is very nice. It's not my favorite stuff.
But, it's just very clean.
Very clean.
Almost.
Although yeah. I am a big Brian Boland fan, who's also very clean.
Yeah. Again, I just be. I guess we have to be. You know, Kubert, you've got five books out. Amazing. I think I'd asked you before if there is
five,
there
five and a half. Five and a half.
What was that?
DC War.
Right, DC War. So much John Buscema. Is it Buscema or Buscema?
John Buscema.
Buscema. Okay. So much material out there, and only one artist edition. Is there? Can we expect something?
Yes.
An Avengers?
A mix.
Oh, mix, all right.
But there is, I do have scans of one complete Avengers story.
Oh, nice. I started collecting in 1980 with G.I. Joe at the on the spinner rack, and immediately moved to Marvel Triple Action reprints of the Buscema stuff, and that's that and the Paul Smith X-Men. Those are the, that's and actually the Frank Robbins Invaders. Those are my three.
Nice.
Nostalgia comic books. That's about the only thing I have nostalgia for. And so far we haven't had any material show up in an artist edition. So I'm always hopeful, especially I think Paul Smith or even the Romita Jr. run on the X-Men. They seem popular enough that, but the pages really do seem scattered to the wind.
Well, I have hope someday of doing a Paul Smith book, because remember there's a lot more than just those 10 or 11 issues of the X-Men. There were the two oversized specials, X-Men Alpha Flight.
Alpha Flight. Yep.
And then the Doctor Strange work. He had an extended run on Doctor Strange. Yeah. Yeah. And the later ones, some of them he inked himself.
Yeah, those are so nice.
Yeah, they're gorgeous. I actually had a talk with Paul recently about maybe doing some stuff. And, you know, we're going to continue to talk. If he's up for it, you know, I would love to do it.
Last time we talked, I think we were talking about Frank Bellamy, and you didn't like the well, you weren't completely happy with the Heroes and the way the Gutter loss.
Yeah, but to me, I completely understand why they didn't do what I would have wanted to do. I mean, it's easy for me to say because, you know, I'm in this case, it's, you know, me on the forum saying, when's that book coming out, and, you know, do it right.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, that should have been a horizontal book, which, you know, would have made it much more expensive.
Yeah.
But God, it would have been so great.
Yeah, that's the, I feel like any European art is the hole in the, is the hole in the line, or what's missing?
Well, you know, I've reached out to two estates on European stuff. I've reached out to her, to Hergé, and also to Mobius, and Hergé never responded. Mobius, I don't think they responded, or it was vague. Mm-hmm. And then I've also reached out to Otomo. I wanted to do an Otomo Akira artist edition, but never heard back.
I have. I've been getting some blueberry Jean Giraud Mobius works from Dargaud. They're pretty nice, but it's just not the same thing. It's close to the artist edition format, but and I don't mind the foreign language at all. But it's tough trying to source material in another language from another country that you don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I love, you know, there are a bunch of different guys I love in Asia, in Europe, and in the UK. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Hampson. I'm a huge fan of Bellamy. Mm, yeah. You know, so many great artists. I mean, you know, if I could sell enough copies, I'd love to do a Cam Kennedy book, you know?
Right, yes. Yeah.
I mean, you know, his work on Judge Dredd and then Light and Darkness War, and then the Star Wars stuff, you know, great, great, great artist. Virtually unknown, though. It's like people ask me about doing a Winter World.
Jorge Zaffino.
Jorge Zaffino. I can't believe I forgot his name.
Oh, I'd love one too.
But you know what? That was another book that I did early on. We did Winter World, but we did Winter World including the 48-page unpublished story.
Waterworld. Yep.
Yeah. I would love to do a Zaffino book, but there's just all the Winterworld stuff is spread around. Sure. Punisher stuff is also spread around. But even if I could do a book, I couldn't mix and match Punisher and Winterworld because right. They're two different property owners.
All right.
It just doesn't work. It's like I had an idea I wanted to do a book on the Marvel and DC crossovers. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's enough material to do a really nice book on that, but you know, it's Marvel and it's DC, and they won't go for someone like that.
Does Simonston still have his art for the X-Men Teen Titans?
He does his share, because if you recall, Terry Austin inked it.
Yeah. And Terry Austin still holding firm to not wanting any of his artwork out there.
You know, it's his artwork. It's his choice.
No, agreed. Yeah. No, absolutely. I don't hold it against him. Just it's an interesting. How about something like, I think it'd been asked before, but how about then something like a Warren AE or?
Well, you know, I've already done some Warren stuff.
Yeah, from the portfolios.
Right. And my goal is to eventually do, if I can find enough material, and I've got to start, if I can find enough rights and stuff, I'd love to do a rights in Warren book. Unfortunately, a lot of the stories were broken up fairly recently.
Oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry, I'm jumping around. That Waterworld, did the family still have the original art, or where did you get that story?
No, that was Chuck Dixon, the writer, had, you know, I don't think he had the originals. He just sent me scans, I assumed, of copies he had.
Okay.
But maybe he does have the originals, but he just sent me scans of black and white. So it wasn't shot in color, it was shot in black and white. That made me very happy when I found out that still existed.
Pretty great.
It would be nice if the Alex Toth NMEA story still existed. I would have put that in the Joe Kubert book.
There's so much great Toth I'd love to see. I'm thankful the Library of American Comics did they're up to 5 volumes now of the Toth biography.
Yeah. And the only artist edition I did not edit.
Yep. Were you involved at all? I mean, your name's in it.
Consulting editor. I mean, that's all Dean Mullaney's baby, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he has done such an incredible job on, I mean, I'm just going to focus on Alex Toth right now, but on all of his books, the care and detail and love he puts into them are mind-boggling to me. I mean, his commitment dwarfs mine, really. But the Toth books especially are, you know, I hate to say this, but they're important, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's such a almost groundbreaking look at an artist. And such a great artist and such a complex artist. You know, I cannot say enough about those books. They are ones that, you know, I treasure.
Yeah, agreed. Amazing. And that's actually Library of American Comics is the that's the second thing I'm honing in on completing the set of. It's a little more arduous than the artist editions for sure. You saw Yojimbo. Was that your first book with IDW Limited?
No. First one was the John Byrne Fantastic Four.
Right, but, yes.
But, you know, there were two editors listed and, you know, Chris Ryle's first, I'm second.
Yeah.
Chris did everything. I just sort of, you know, finished it.
Oh, okay.
He was the guy that did all that. I worked on the Stan book, which I'm happy to say Stan was very happy with. And I have plans for, I'm going to be taking over the artist select. I have about a dozen books that I would like to do. And I've spoken to a number of different artists who are all up for it. So, you know, I'm not going to mention any names, but, you know, they're all, I mean, the artist select is a little bit more difficult in some ways. It's very, I don't want to say easy, but it's easier, but in some ways it's more difficult because of the sketch component.
Mm-hmm. Right. Is that line financial? Like, is that a stable line? Is that a popular line? Is it successful?
You know, it like anything, it depends on who the books are focused on. I mean, right. The Bill Sienkiewicz one sold out completely, and others have not. Yeah. And then were solicited through Diamond later.
Yep.
You know, we're exploring maybe cutting some books down from 1,000 to 500. Yeah. Again, it's an expensive book, though, especially the 50-copy limited one with clamshell case and, you know, crazy extra materials.
Yeah, I have four of them. Are they recolored?
Some of them are. Marvel has been recoloring, updating a lot of their old files. Okay. A lot of times they don't have colored files on things, so they'll do their best to match the original coloring. Which, you know, like for instance, I did that with Mike Mignola's Dracula book. That one was completely recolored, but the coloring, the place that I used to color it, they matched. I had all the comics scanned and I emailed them all the files and then went through and approved it. And, you know, happily, Mike Mignola was happy with it.
Very nice.
I used the word happy twice in the same sentence.
Original artwork available for that?
Not really.
No.
You know, I mean, I could find some, but, you know, again, it's been spread out far and wide. I could probably, you know, we're talking about like, you know, less than 120 pages.
Yeah.
So I could probably find about half of that.
Really? Wow.
And luckily my pal, John Nyberg had photocopies of the pencils of a lot of it. And that was included in the book.
Right. Interesting. The way back with Xenozoic Tales, you'd included at the back, you'd included a cover with the paints and then the acetate, of the black and white art overlay.
Yeah, yeah.
Any thoughts ever of doing like a color guidebook or something like maybe the artisan's edition size with that kind of material?
You know what? That's an interesting idea. It never occurred to me. I mean, Joe Chido used to do color guides way back when that were really beautiful for Marvel and then for Wildstorm. And that might make an interesting book. It might make an interesting portion of a book. I don't think it would make a great entire book.
That's Steve Olaf was selling a lot of his stuff mid-90s on eBay. Yeah. I have 12 color guides from Cosmic Odyssey. I can't believe how bright and the colors just astounding on the color guide when they're done that way with like the watercolors and the black and white acetate overlay. It's just amazing.
That's right.
Was there ever any thought to the artist editions being part of the IDW Limited line? Or did that come after? I think that they
IDW
came later.
Limited came later.
Okay. They just, their approach, I think I touched on this briefly in the email I sent you, but I really feel like the books don't have enough time to shine in the solicitations. This seems to be part of the, you know, whether it's a, whether it's, you know, your $4 comic or your artist edition, they've got the time and previews, you know, basic info gets put on the website, and then it's, you got to move on to the next month.
Yeah.
And the limited line really, you know, they really seem to shine. They got a lot of interior images. They've got a nice email list. They've got follow-ups. It just feels like there's time being taken to almost a hand sell from a, you know, an electronic, you know, hands-off sort of way.
Yeah. It would be nice if we could actually get our act together in the way you're talking about for artist editions. Yeah, maybe it's a matter of finding the right person to do it. Cause I don't have time to do it. And I'm not the most organized guy in the world.
That's also what you have a media department for, right?
Yes.
I was on the website, and there was on the artist edition page, there was a sign up one day for a newsletter. And I thought, oh, it's fantastic. There was one newsletter came out for the Gene Colan Dracula. I thought, hey, they're showing images. It's great. And then that was just boom, never again. But what happened? Where did it go? Because every time I mean, obviously I follow you on social media because I'm waiting for the breadcrumbs to drop here and there. But every time you mention a new book coming up, the response is almost always, what? I had no idea. What? These books exist? Come on.
I know.
Like, how does it, I'm so immersed in it that it's to me, it's every day. But every time I'm talking to somebody, or I'll haul a book to a convention. I don't go to a lot of conventions, just from where I live. But I'll haul some books to a convention, and I'll be waiting in line, and someone will say, "What's that?" And then, you know, you start the conversation and explain what this format of book is. It's I find it incredible that so few people seem to be aware in the general consensus.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I do have to laugh a little bit when, everybody's on a budget. When I hear people complain about the prices of the books, I do laugh a little bit because I think, you know, if you want to buy one page of Commandy, mm-hmm. you could buy 20 artist editions.
Yeah.
So anyway, but you know, everybody's on a budget. I mean, I don't begrudge anyone for wanting to get the best price they can,
yeah.
But, if you want that experience, I think it may not be cheap, but I think it is also not overly exorbitant.
No. Yeah. I mean, I'm not even sure you can get any art anymore for $150.
Oh, you can look on eBay.
I did collect original art for about 12 years, and I gave it up. And then I started collecting these artist editions. And I guess it's perspective. Whether you want, are you buying these? And I think the board is split on that. Are you buying them nostalgia? You want to see the art? You like the artist? Or are you buying them because you are solely interested in the art and want to examine, you know, the artist's brush strokes and their pencils? And the...
You know, I don't know if it needs to be one or the other. Mm. You know, for me, a lot of it is nostalgia. I mean, you know, I've talked about this, you know, God knows several times before, but, you know, when I was a kid, my favorite three books were Commandy, Tarzan, and Manhunter, or three of my favorites, but those were really some of my absolute favorites. You know, they were books that meant a lot to me. So to be able to do them as artist editions, you know, was a thrill. But, so for me, nostalgia is a great part of it, but, you know, other guys who are more recent. I mean, I don't have any nostalgia for Chris Somney, but I love his work.
How well did that book do that you, is there a chance of something like that again?
I don't know. It was tough. You know, the slipcase, the extra book, you know, all that really made it an expensive proposition. It sold okay, not great, but... You know, I like trying new things. I like trying do things that push it a little bit occasionally. And, you know, when Chris told me he not only had all of his layouts, but also had the script with every single page has a drawing on it of starting to do initial thoughts on layouts, you know, that just seemed like something that had never been seen before. And it was something I really wanted to do. I'm also not sure if doing the second book as a soft cover was a good idea. From a financial standpoint, it was, but
it's you have to gingerly place it back into the slipcase.
Yeah,
but
I guess if in a perfect world, if I could have, if budget wasn't a concern, I probably would have done it as a hardcover and have the spine on the horizontal side up.
Right.
So it could actually be spine and spine inserted.
Right. Speaking of one-offs, Sam Keith, your regular edition signed. What inspired that one and done kind of thing? I haven't seen another regular edition signed.
Yeah, I just made him. Okay. Sam's one of my best friends, so it was pretty easy.
All right.
And also, I mean, it's a creator-owned book, so you know he had a larger financial stake in it.
All right. Will we see more like that, or do you think that was unique enough to leave as is?
I have another book that would be an artisan edition that I'm talking to the artist about signing all the copies because I don't think it'll sell all that well.
Okay.
But I think if he signs every copy and we limit it to like, you know, 1,000 or something, then there might be more interest in it from people. So maybe
the Usagi Jimbo Limited again. You shot it from the original art, just sort of a reduced size. Was that
every page except for the covers?
Right. Would you pursue that again for now that you're working with Marvel Select?
Oh yeah, if I could, sure.
Was that more? Has it been successful enough from the website? Will that even be solicited through Diamond?
It might be. We were planning on doing a big push at around Comic-Con this year.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, it's a book that, you know, isn't cheap and has a long shelf life.
Right.
You know, the limited version, well, actually, in fairness, they're both limited. But the sketched version in the clamshell, the more expensive version, sold out, you know, very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And we still have hundreds of copies left of the regular limited version. And we're, you know, working on getting the word out there. And we have some things planned with Stan. So hopefully we'll sell more because I would like to do more of those.
Yeah, it was a great book.
Well, you know, Stan is such a great artist. And to be able to do, you know, what many consider to be his best story, although I'm not sure I agree with that because so many of his stories are so good.
Yeah. I did not read the series as they were coming out. When Dark Horse started releasing those collected editions, I bought all the signed hardcovers and enjoying it from there. Actually, was the fan. I am the fan mostly of the original stories that Fantagraphics still has the rights to.
Sure.
But you guys are doing them in color now. So is that an agreement with Fantagraphics, or just Stan has the rights and can go anywhere he wants?
I have no insight into that at all.
Okay.
Bobby Curnow is the editor on that, I have not been involved with it. Yeah. I was actually wondering about that myself. I was planning at some point on asking about that.
So especially just to see how the follow-up's going to go with the newer editions. Were they going to follow the Dark Horse's route and Fantagraphics route with the collected limited hardcovers? As far as announced, I had some posts MIA, you know, missing in action, and I think you've answered most of them from the past. The last podcast you did, you mentioned that the Carl Barks, you just couldn't find enough pages for to actually do an artifact edition.
Yeah, my mom used to have a saying, and she would say, "Your eyes were bigger than your stomach."
Yeah. I know we'll see the Steranko book, you know, when it happens.
I actually spoke to him a couple of weeks ago.
Wow. And
I called him up. I wanted to check and see how he was doing. He's doing great.
Good.
You know, he sounded really good. He's a very social person, so I'm sure he's not enjoying the lockdown, but he's healthy. And I did, at the end of the call, we talked for about a half an hour. And at the end of the call, I said, "Okay, Jim, I got to bring it up. You got to finish those chapter breaks. You know, people are dying for this book." And he promised me he would. So hopefully, it'll come out at some point. I mean, I'm looking on the bright side. I do occasionally get a piece of art to add to the book.
Very nice.
You know, I was missing three pages from the three Captain America issues, and I'm now only missing one.
Oh, was one of them from that recent auction, or the splash?
Was that
Cap's leaking over the car, and the guy's coming out of the driver's side with a gun?
That might have been it. Yeah. It was from the collection of Jerry Robinson.
Right.
And I got it from his son. At this point, maybe like 5 years ago.
Wow.
Not that long ago. Maybe like. Oh, actually, no. That's right. I did. Okay, I forgot. I did get the one from Jerry Robinson 5 years ago. There was another one that one was not up for auction because I know the person who owns it and he still has it. Okay. I got that one about a year and a half ago.
Oh, very nice.
Or maybe a year ago. Now I'm only missing page one to the final episode, one with Steve Rogers standing in front of the poster of Captain America lighting a cigarette.
Oh, that's a great image.
And what's really funny is I remember years ago at a convention, at one of the New York Second Sunday conventions, there was an art dealer named Al Czarnecki. I mean, this goes back to the early 80s.
Right.
And Al had that splash hanging up for sale, and it was $200. And I kept on looking at it and went, I want to find a better one.
that's how it goes. Yeah, that's original art, right? There's only one.
That's right. There's only one.
Oh, that's so frustrating. If you could find more art, if you could complete something, so say, like, as an example, the Frank Miller Artifact Edition, if you could come across the additional art and complete some of that, would you go back? Would you fill in? Would you do another edition?
100%.
Do you think there'd be enough demand for something like that?
Yes.
I guess the Frank Miller name is would certainly is something that would sell that.
Yeah, I mean, if I could get, if I could get Daredevil 160, actually, I'm going to go back further. I can get Daredevil 163, 168, 175, 76, 77, 181. Yeah, those.
I think I've asked you in an email or something, but Electra Lives Again, is that artwork? I see a couple pieces on Calf, but is it possible? I know I'm really the fanboy at this point in the call with the what's possible, what isn't, but
it used to be possible. It's not possible anymore. I tried. Frank Miller had the original art, and then I believe, and don't quote me on this, I believe when he got, I believe there was an eventual divorce settlement where he split the art with Lynn Varley. Again, don't take it as gospel.
No, yeah. I'd heard that as well, yeah.
I had tried to get the work scanned. Unfortunately, they had a scanner and they were scanning stuff through a roller, one of those rolling scanners. Yeah. And it just wasn't coming out right. And so I kind of just gave up on it, unfortunately, because that would have, it would have been, in a perfect world, what I would have liked to have done was do an artist edition of that book. Because remember, that book's not very long. It's like 62 pages, maybe. In a perfect world, I would have scanned the black and white art and the color art.
Yeah.
Separately. Yeah. Because the black and white work looks completely different and it's incredibly gorgeous. I mean, the color is really nice, but the black and white stuff is phenomenal.
Yeah. It's all personal opinion, right? But to me, that was my favorite Frank Miller period.
It's great stuff. I mean, to me, my favorite period is probably from Ronin to the first Sin City.
Yep, Ronin is awesome. I'm thrilled with most of the stuff Graffiti Designs has put out. I was talking about these books to somebody else, and I only bought some artist editions as it came out because I was only buying what I really was interested in, and then I started to fill in the gaps. And a lot of them, some material I'm not a fan of, but to be a completist for the website, I buy the book anyways, and I've always found something to appreciate, whether it's the Herb Trimpe or the Ross Andrew.
It's just
not my material, but you can certainly, as you sit and look at the art, you can really appreciate what's happening there, and that's coming from the place of a comic art fan or an art fan as opposed to the nostalgia or story related.
Yeah, and sometimes I sometimes I feel like I'm overly judgmental on artist work, and I have to kind of remind myself that I could not do anything remotely.
That's so true. Right? Yeah. It's, yeah. We. Yeah. I don't have any artistic talent, but that's we can all be armchair quarterbacks, right? Or
actually, I've occasionally used a line that I stole from Jack Davis. Although with him, it was more ironic because he was obviously a great artist. Yeah. But a kid walked up to him at a show once, and you know, like probably 10 years old, and said, you know, he was talking to a couple of people, and the kid says, "Hey, mister, what do you draw?" And Davis just kind of leaned back, arches back, and hooked his thumbs underneath his armpits and went, "Flies, my boy, flies." And that's kind of how I feel. I draw flies.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Is there any hope of DC material again, or?
You know, I never count anything out. So, I have a bunch of friends at DC, and it's something that I'm sure at some point we'll talk about again. And, I have a list of more than a dozen books that I would like to do.
Right.
And not even all artist editions. Hopefully, like I would love to do just an art book on Jose Luis Garcia Lopez's DC style guides, as well as an artist edition of Dead Man and Cinder and Ash.
Yes.
And his DC Comics Presents work, the stuff that he inked himself. Okay. The guy is just, you know, a very underrated artist, in my opinion.
I'd love to buy a book of just his style guide.
Oh yeah.
Right. You're right. It's just amazing. So, and I mean, again, the talk on the forums is the irony is you're publishing the second Jim Lee, book, I believe he's still publisher of DC. So very, very interesting circumstances.
You know, well, I mean, two things are in play there. One is we're publishing Jim's work, but it is Marvel.
Yeah, Marvel. Yes.
And Jim and I are old and close friends.
Yeah.
And that helps.
Just like every fan, you always want what hasn't happened yet or what you'd like to see in the future. We all have a giant wish list, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I have one myself.
I see you thanked or mentioned in the back of some of the omnibuses and are you offering up scans of art to Marvel when they need it, or?
Oh, sure. And there's a guy up at Marvel. Actually, he's a freelancer, but he handles most of their collected editions. His name is Corey Settlemyer. And Corey is, he's like my brother in arms in doing stuff. I mean, if he needs anything and I have it, I'll get it to him. And occasionally he has stuff that I need too. So he's been a huge help in artist editions in the past.
Right.
And yeah, very generous guy with his time and knowledge.
I picked up that Marvel Ditko is amazing in the hopes of seeing the Amazing Fantasy 15 art, but it's have you seen that book at all?
I have not.
Oh, it's the art's very gray. It almost looks like early photocopies or So it's and I have not gone to Library of Congress yet. I was going to go this year. But I'll have to plan that out later. I want to see because anybody with ID, you can just schedule and you can see all the art yourself.
Sure.
But for the pictures I've seen, the art's quite clean. But unfortunately, yeah, this.
I have scans of Amazing Fantasy 15 of the Spider-Man story and also the other stories.
From the previous owner, or did you get that from the Library of Congress?
I have no idea who the previous owner was.
Oh,
I got them from someone who got them from the Library of Congress.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, I read you had mentioned before. I think you had right. You had that and two other complete Ditko Spider-Man stories.
Three others.
So you've got four. So you're basically ready to roll.
Oh, I have. I mean, right now I have four Spider-Man stories. I have the Amazing Fantasy 15, which is shorter. And then I have 20, 26, and 33.
Wow.
I also have two covers. I have several pinups I have a, probably 200 Spider-Man pages, interior pages.
Wow.
And then I have about a dozen complete pre-hero stories.
So you got easily got enough material for 3 or 4 volumes.
Well, I mean, what I would love to do is I'd love to do a Spider-Man artist edition followed by a Spider-Man artifact edition followed by a pre-hero book.
Right.
But it might, you know, if we're ever able to do the Ditko book, you know, it would probably be a mixture of Spider-Man. Well, maybe what I would do is I would do just Spider-Man, the first book, and the second book of the artifact. I would do, actually, I guess it would be an artist edition then because I have so many complete stories of a bunch of Spider-Man pages and the dozen or so stories I have.
What is the holdup then? I mean, you know, just you've got the family on board. I think you're right. You had them on last year.
Yeah, no, the family's on board. You know, I'm hoping. You know, it took a while to do the Jim Lee X-Men book. It took a while to do the Micronauts book. I'm hoping that, you know, eventually we can do a Steve Ditko book, you know. And again, you know, it's Marvel's material. They're free to do whatever they want. And, you know, I always hold that hope.
Right. Do you have to approach Marvel with each book? Or is it more...
We generally... work out a, we have a contract with them and we have amendments that are added with each individual book stated. So, you know, for 2021, for instance, we have several books that are ready contractually to go, but okay. I still need to track that out.
Right. Is it by character? Or is it always by artist and then title or?
It's by artist.
By artist. Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
And it also depends on whether the artist is on board. You know, for instance, with Michael Golden, you know, if he wasn't on board for doing the Micronauts book, then we wouldn't do it.
Right. And then if it's someone who's passed, then you next go to the family to get?
Yeah, like with the Cockrum book, I approached Patty Cockrum, right. And she was very, very helpful, a really sweet woman. And, you know, she was on board for it. I'm excited to send her a copy of, an advance when I finally get it.
That's awesome. That's,
you want to hear a funny story about that?
I do.
So when we did the Gil Kane book, I couldn't find, Gil Kane's widow, until after it was solicited. And then when I did get a hold of her, I sent her an email and I said, "Hi, my name is Scott Doombeer. We're just doing this book. We'll be sending you comp copies." And, I called her. That's right. I got her phone number and I called her and I told her that, you know, we were doing this book. And I said, you know, and, you know, we'll be paying you royalties. And so I'll need you to fill out a W-9, and she hung up on me, and because she thought I was trying to steal her identity.
Right.
So I called up Gary Groth at Fantagraphics, and I said, "Hey, Gary, can you please call up Gil's widow and tell her this is on the up and up?" And he did, and then it was all settled, and she was very happy. She got that was a good selling book, so she got a nice check.
Will we see more theme books like Jack Kirby's Marvel Heroes and Monsters?
Well, again, like I was saying with the John Buscema book, that book will be a mixture of things. You know, there'll be right now there are 4 stories that are going to go into it. One of them is the Avengers 51, so that'll be sort of like that. I also have in mind doing, and maybe I talked about this last time we spoke, I have in mind doing a best of the 60s, best of the 70s, right. Best of the 80s book. You know, there's been some talk about doing characters also, maybe doing an X-Men book or a Wolverine book or something like that. That's a possibility too. One thing I want to do, you know, like with the EC covers book, I'd love to do a Jack Kirby covers book for Marvel.
Right.
You know, because I probably between all the books that I've
I've done, I probably have like 80 or 90 covers. Maybe not that many, but feels like it. I mean, I had like 24 covers in the Fantastic Four book, I think.
Yeah.
Twice Up one, and I had like 12 or 13 in the Thor book, and then, you know, the other covers that I've managed to acquire that haven't been printed yet too. So, you know, that would be a possibility.
Is the pre-orders for the EC covers well on a strong enough that you see, I guess the Marvel covers books have done well. And I was wondering just about the EC covers, just based on, I'm rambling. If somebody owns most of the other ones, they have a large number of covers, but I mean, that's not holding me back from wanting this book, but are you seeing good pre-orders for it or?
Yeah, the orders are okay. They're not great, but they're okay. And also remember, I mean, there are a lot of covers that have never been published before. Yeah. That I've gotten in the last, you know, few years. And I've gotten a lot of covers. I mean, more than 30 covers in the last, well, late last year, I started really looking intently. Mm. And I'm hoping to get more because my trip to New York, one of those collections included three great EC covers.
Oh, nice.
And then there's a gentleman who has three wonderful Kurtzman War covers, but I was going to get scans from him. But if several things caused that to not happen, and he doesn't have a scanner. But there's a place that he's used in the past, but he can't get to it now.
Right.
So I'm hoping that eventually we can add those six covers to the book because they're really nice. And I'll tell you one thing. We worked out an arrangement with DC Comics and Warner Brothers. We'll be doing a number of the Mad covers as well.
Oh, nice.
Not all of them.
Right.
But a dozen. So the ones that are, you know, the ones that I think are the most important.
Mm. Isn't that interesting? One hand could take away and give with the other hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
I bought the book, and then I bought the EC portfolio strictly for that Frazetta cover.
That's not a bad cover.
No, that was the gateway, right? The amazing books. I really appreciate you talking to me. That's pretty well all my questions I had.
Well, Scott, as always, I appreciate all your help and support. I mean, you know, you are the patron saint of Artist Edition.
Let her go, God bless her, wherever she may be. She can search this wide world over. She'll never find a sweet man like me.